Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You've sent us an incredible stack of sources from the gaming world this month, and honestly, the headlines are giving us whiplash. We're looking at huge development roadmaps stretching out to 2026, but also like immediate cultural events, free games, and some pretty shocking legal stuff. Our mission today is simple. Filter all this noise for you, give you that sharp, comprehensive understanding of what's actually happening in gaming right now. Think of it as the analytical shortcut, everything that matters, from indie buzz to big industry friction points.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it, how these sources pull us in two directions. On one hand, yeah, games that won't fully launch for another year or more, very deliberate long-term planning, and then boom, right alongside that, you've got these immediate stories, K-pop leaks, really aggressive launch incentives, scams. It's like a snapshot at the whole industry, planning years ahead, but also fighting tooth and nail for your attention today.
Okay, let's try and unpack that. Starting with a long view, the big genre that's still dominating, survival games. We've got significant news on two titans, both starting early access, Palworld and Valheim. What's the September update telling us about where these huge projects are heading?
I think the key word is commitment and stability. For Palworld, the developer Pocket Pair finally confirmed it, leaving early access sometime in 2026. And that's more than just a date, right? It's a statement. It shows how that early access model is, well, maturing. It signals they're moving from it's coming eventually to a concrete product roadmap.
Right. That shift is huge for players.
Yeah.
Knowing there's an actual end goal, Palworld blew up because it mixed survival and crafting with, well, basically Pokemon, the pals. So what does a firm 2026 window actually imply for the final game? What can we expect?
It implies focus, definitely focus. The core gameplay is there. People love it. Now it's about polish, content, smashing those bugs. We should expect, you know, bigger environments, more creatures, and probably much more stable multiplayer. They need to earn that 1.0 tag, deliver the complete polished thing that made it popular in the first place. And almost in parallel, you have Valheim, Iron Gate Studios' Viking survival hit. They're making a really strategic move for their own 2026 plan, announcing the official launch on PlayStation consoles also in 2026.
Okay, PlayStation, that's a massive audience expansion. It started PC, hit Xbox. But why announce the PlayStation version now, while they're still presumably working towards the full 1.0 release everywhere? Is that about spreading risk? Or just grabbing the biggest possible market share?
Oh, it's definitely market maximization. Planned well in advance, I'd bet. By hitting PlayStation right around the 1.0 launch, they capture everyone. Maximum hype, maximum media attention. They use the buzz from PC and Xbox to make the PlayStation launch feel definitive. Like the complete package arriving everywhere at once. Not just another port, you know? A unified big splash.
Okay, so that's the long game. The 2026 outlook. Let's pivot hard now. What's hitting right now? And how are developers getting, well, creative? Maybe even aggressive with their marketing. We've got two really different examples here. First up, this indie horror game, Concierge.
Yeah, Concierge. This is the kind of indie project that needs something loud to cut through the noise. It's aiming high, trying to be in that Amnesia, the Bunker, Madison category, psychological horror, innovative stuff. The setting looks really disorienting, cryptic puzzles, that kind of vibe. Game Rant had the trailer reveal.
But the hook, the thing grabbing headlines, is this bounty. They're offering $500 cash to the first players who uncover some deep, hidden secrets in the game, and that's on top of a launch discount.
It's a fascinating tactic. Very targeted marketing. Think about the cost. $500, that's like nothing compared to a good ad buy. But what they're buying is instant engagement, turning early players into super-focused detectives.
Isn't that risky, though? I mean, what if someone finds the secret super fast? Pay out $500, the mystery's gone. What does it say about how hard they think these secrets are? And what's the, like, PR value of that $500?
It signals huge confidence in their puzzle design. They're betting that $500 hunt generates weeks of chatter, you know, forum threads, Discord servers, people talking about it, organic buzz. It turns the game's core feature, its cryptic nature, into this public competition. Really smart for an indie without a massive budget.
Yeah, that actually is brilliant. Okay, completely different end of the spectrum now, scale-wise.
Yeah.
Metal. Hellsinger.
Right. This one feels more like pure community goodwill, probably funded by its own success. Metal. Hellsinger is that rhythm FPS, amazing metal soundtrack, big artists. And it's got that overwhelmingly positive rating on Steam. It's a proven hit. And the big news, Steam users can get it for free, permanently, just by watching a special live stream event on September 19th or 20th.
Wow. Permanently. Not just a free weekend, but keep it forever. What's the play there? Giving away a game that's critically acclaimed and probably still selling.
It's got to be about ecosystem loyalty. and maybe setting up future sales. Give away a proven hit, you instantly put a great game into potentially millions of Steam libraries. That does two things. Generates goodwill for whatever the studio does next and keeps their name visible. It's likely a loss leader. Maybe they made their money back already or have a partner. But the goal is buzz and loyalty for the next thing they announce.
Okay, let's shift gears again. Talk about the big IPs. How are major franchises expanding, and where's the friction legal cultural? Starting with culture, you basically can't talk gaming culture without mentioning Fortnite. There's a leak suggesting a huge collab coming with K-pop group Demon Hunters.
Yeah, Fortnite just keeps solidifying its role as this central cultural platform. We saw them change the game with virtual concerts, right? Travis Scott, Marshmallow, a big K-pop collab skins, emotes, music, maybe another concert that just pushes its global dominance further.
What is it about Fortnite specifically? Why does it succeed where others try these big crossovers and maybe don't get the same traction?
I think it's the infrastructure. It's built for it. Fortnite isn't just a game anymore. It's a digital place people hang out. Low friction. It handles huge crowds easily. And crucially, it normalizes digital identity through skins and emotes. So when K-pop stars come to Fortnite, they're not just promoting a song, they're selling a digital persona people can adopt. That's powerful. Meanwhile, a very different kind of IP adaptation just launched. Dragon Ball Gekishin Squadra.
Right. The sources mentioned this one. Free-to-play MOBA. Multiplayer online battle arena, out now on Steam.
Exactly. This is using the massive Dragon Ball name to try and break into a super competitive genre, MOBAs. MOBAs are all about team strategy, deep character rosters. By using Dragon Ball's iconic fighting styles, characters, visuals, they're offering a familiar way in, hoping to pull in that huge anime fan base who might normally skip MOBAs entirely.
Okay, now let's pivot to that friction we mentioned, the legal side. Yeah. This story about counterfeit goods is kind of staggering. A New York man facing charges, allegedly selling over $2 million worth of fake Nintendo and Pokemon stuff.
$2 million. From one guy's operation.
Yeah, incredible scale. And it really makes you question the integrity of online marketplaces, doesn't it? The fakes were everything. Switches, Pokemon cards, TCG cards, accessories.
Yeah.
The works.
How does an operation like that even function at that scale? $2 million isn't just printing some cards at home. That suggests a pretty sophisticated setup, supply chain, distribution.
It really highlights how quickly and anonymously this stuff can move online.
Yeah.
Often through third-party sellers on big platforms, that $2 million figure points to a serious, organized effort targeting buyers who are desperate for these high-demand items. It took Nintendo and the Pokemon Company working with federal law enforcement to track it down. This isn't just ripping off consumers. It damages the brands, cuts into legitimate sales. It's a huge problem.
Definitely shows the dark underbelly of that collector's market excitement we sometimes see. All right, time for our rapid fire round. The quick hits you need to stay completely up to date on the September gaming scene. Let's add some context here, make sure these aren't just headlines flying by. Okay, first up, subscription value. Good news for Game Pass subscribers. Hades, the universally loved action RPG from Supergiant Games, is hitting Xbox Game Pass this month, September 2025. That makes it the eighth new title added just this month.
Hades is huge, a real benchmark for indie quality. When a service like Game Pass adds a game like that, what signal does it send?
It signals they're still committed to quality, proven hits that get people playing immediately. Game Pass needs to keep people subscribed, right? So they need consistent value. Adding Hades shows they're offering both the big new releases and these beloved established indies. Caters to everyone, justifies the cost. Okay, next, back to market friction. But this time, it's about legitimate products getting swamped by scalpers.
Ah, you mean the pre-orders for the new Pokemon TCG set, Phantasmal Flames?
That's the one. Pre-orders basically evaporated instantly. Automated bots just cleaned them out. Major retailers in North America reported sellouts within minutes of the listings going live. And this ties right back to the counterfeit issue, actually. Both problems feed off that hyperinflated demand and perceived scarcity. The huge desire for physical collectibles like TCGs just incentivizes bots and scalpers who resell for crazy markups. It really exposes a vulnerability in how authorized retailers handle these high-demand launches. The average fan gets squeezed out.
Moving quickly to the release schedule, there's a motorsports history game, Formula Legends, out this week, September 18th. Looks like one for the real racing history buffs.
Yeah.
Reimagined old circuits, classic cars.
And one last quick hit. This one's technical but important for FPS players. The Battlefield 6 devs shared some deep details on how aim assist is working in their game. They stressed they're trying to make it accessible but also maintain competitive integrity.
Ah, the aim assist debate. Always a hot topic, especially with crossplay between PC mouse keyboard and console controllers. What's the core challenge they're trying to solve there?
Essentially, yeah, balancing input methods. Controllers need some assist to hang with mouse precision, but competitive integrity means it can't be too strong, can't feel like an aimbot. It should help controller players feel smooth, not give them an unfair kill advantage. By talking openly about the mechanics, they're trying to build trust, especially with that competitive PC crowd. So yeah, wrapping it all up, September 2025 in gaming feels defined by these future promises, like the big 2026 survival game dates, but also these really immediate disruptive tactics, like that $500 concierge bounty. And then there's this constant ongoing battle against the systemic stuff, counterfeits, scalping, especially for physical goods.
It's a really dynamic snapshot, isn't it? An industry constantly juggling digital future gazing with very real world friction. We went from deep early access plans to free game giveaways to, well, multi-million dollar fraud rings. But here's the final thought we want to leave you with, building on that fraud and the scalping issues. Given the scale of that counterfeit operation, over $2 million, and how intertwined physical and digital economies are now, like with TCG scalping, how much of the gaming world actually exists outside the control of the developers and the official retailers now? Is that black market, that gray market, is it becoming less of a bug and more of a core, unavoidable feature of the whole ecosystem? Something to think about.